Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Orange County Library System, offering enriching programs and resources for seniors at 15 locations throughout the county, with hands-on workshops, expert-led seminars, and more. A complete list of programs is available at ocls.org/senior/events.
Immigration enforcement in Orange County. What's happening, and is it legal? You're listening to The Wrap from Central Florida Public Media. I'm Brendan Byrne. The number of ICE detainees at the Orange County Jail is on the rise for yet another month. According to the latest figures, detainees with no local charges saw the greatest increase in January. Orange County Mayor Jerry Demings said beginning in March, the jail will soon limit that number and will eliminate the practice of multiple bookings for the same immigration matter. This is how attorney Josephine Arroyo explains the process she says ICE is using to bypass the 72-hour holding limit, essentially keeping her clients locked up longer than the law allows.
Orange County is allowing ICE to circumvent the law by removing individuals every 72 hours, then bringing them back.
We'll hear from Stetson University College of Law professor Michael Vasteen about what is legal and what judges can do if authorities overstep. That's ahead on The Wrap. The big stories this week from Central Florida Public Media. But first, these news headlines. Orange County Mayor Jerry Demings has notified U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement that next month, the jail will limit the number of detainees being held without criminal charges. Central Florida Public Media's Joe Burns reports the county will also stop letting ICE rebook detainees in order to hold them without charges for longer than 72 hours.
In a letter dated Tuesday, Mayor Demings says ICE has been removing detainees and returning them, restarting the 72-hour clock. Demings says that strains resources, disrupts workflow, and circumvents the county's intergovernmental service agreement with the federal government, which sets the limit at 48 hours. Here's immigration attorney Josephine Arroyo.
Sometimes when they're rebooked, it takes them a while to update the system, which is why there's been many times where we're at the jail trying to find our client, and they tell us that they're not there, but indeed they are, and it wasn't in the system.
She says the rebookings prevented immigration bond hearings for her clients and triggered court filings to win their release. Demings says the number of detainees held without local charges would be capped at 66 men and 64 women. Joe Burns, Central Florida Public Media.
The Orange County School Board met Tuesday to discuss the impacts of the potential closures of seven schools. Central Florida Public Media's education reporter Danielle Pryor explains they shared feedback from families about the proposed changes.
There were trends in the concerns, board members said they heard from parents and families at community listening sessions, concerns about transportation, moving special ed students, and consolidating gifted programs. That's why board members like Alicia Ferran encouraged families to continue to submit feedback on the proposed changes using an online survey through February 17th.
You know, I really want to thank the community and the parents who have been really involved and patient even, and just being a part of this. I don't think it's easy for any of us.
Board members will have the ultimate say in whether to close the seven schools and what rezoning plans will look like. That vote could come as early as March 10th. Just last month, another Central Florida school district, Brevard Public Schools, announced it would close Cape View Elementary and lay off 7% of staff. Danielle Pryor, Central Florida Public Media.
The state will now offer driver's license exams only in English. Before, exams for most non-commercial licenses could be taken in multiple languages, and tests for commercial licenses to drive larger vehicles like trucks were available in English and Spanish. Nancy Milan is the Hillsborough County Tax Collector. Her office issues driver's license.
Transportation is something that is very critical in just being a productive citizen in our county.
She says about 37% of tests in Hillsborough were taken in a language other than English last year. Milan says DMV offices have seen an influx of people in the last several days. More than half took their exams in a non-English language. Florida Department of Highway and Safety Motor Vehicles did not return a request for comment. The Artemis II mission will remain on the ground for at least a month. Issues during a test Monday are prompting the delay of the Astronaut Moon mission until at least next month. After a practice run of launch day, teams ran into a number of issues, including a hydrogen fuel leak, a problem with the spacecraft's hatch, and communication dropouts. NASA is now targeting a launch in early March. These stories and more on our website. Visit cfpublic.org. This month marks the 100th year of recognizing what we now know as Black History Month in the United States. The city of Orlando is celebrating with a slate of events, including a new downtown art exhibit filled with more than 24 local Black artists' interpretation of this year's national theme, A Century of Black History Commemorations. Hear more about Orlando's event. That's this week on Spotlight. Get it wherever you get this podcast. Orange County announced two major changes to how it handles immigration enforcement. It will limit the number of ICE detainees at the jail and stop a controversial cycle of removing and rebooking used to extend a detainee's time in custody. Beginning March 1st, Orange County Corrections will cap the number of ICE detainees with no local charges at 66 men and 64 women. Also, beginning in March, Orange County will eliminate the practice of multiple bookings for the same immigration matter. This is how attorney Josephine Arroyo explains the process. She says ICE is using to bypass the 72-hour holding limit, essentially keeping her clients locked up longer than the law allows.
This is not an isolated incident. It is a pattern. Orange County is allowing ICE to circumvent the law by removing individuals every 72 hours, then bringing them back, rebooking them under a new booking number, artificially resetting the clock, prolonging detention without due process.
Arroyo and other attorneys are turning to filing legal requests in court called habeas corpus petitions to claim their clients are being held in detention illegally. Central Florida Public Media's Engage host, Sharon Stone, spoke with Stetson University College of Law professor Michael Vasteen. He brings us up to speed on the legal landscape of this issue and what judges can do if authorities overstep.
Habeas corpus is the right for anyone to challenge the constitutionality of their detention. In immigration, this is very important because vast numbers of people are subject to something called mandatory detention under the immigration statute. And so historically, they would bring habeas challenges if their detention became prolonged, meaning their immigration case had dragged on for a long time, typically after 6 months or a year. Many immigrants could be successful challenging that they had a liberty interest and the detention had become too long. Or after they were ordered removed, and if the government was not able to remove them to their home country, eventually, again, after 6 months, they would have a liberty interest in being released. The Supreme Court had to deal with those two questions in the early 2000s, and they upheld the constitutionality of mandatory detention.
So why are we seeing habeas corpus being used so frequently right now?
In the news, you see a variety of circumstances in which immigrants are being arrested without warrants. So warrantless arrest could be a basis for bringing a claim. Sometimes they're being held in places where they lacked access to counsel. That was an issue, particularly in South Florida with the detention center in the Everglades. Detainees that were held at that facility did not have access to an immigration court. There were questions about which even federal courts had oversight of that facility. And so individual detainees were bringing claims based on habeas corpus because they were denied their due process rights and their access to counsel. And a huge number of cases have been brought now because the Trump administration, I guess the immigration courts under the Department of Justice, adopted a litigation position first raised by Immigration and Customs Enforcement that huge numbers of immigrants without status should be subject to mandatory detention. That is, that they should always be considered that they were, quote, arriving aliens, end quote, because would-be immigrants at the border without papers are also subject to mandatory detention. But there was decades of precedent that long-term undocumented people in the U.S. are eligible for bond. So there's been litigation using habeas corpus challenging the legality of that change of the government's position.
One case in Central Florida, Javier Jimenez Rivero's case, the judge ruled that immigration enforcement detained him without charges, a warrant, or a hearing. Can you explain what that ruling means legally and why it matters for him and others?
Without getting into the specifics of the case, which would be unfair for me to do, well, if someone is arrested without a warrant, and we've got questions of what's come out in the news around Minnesota. If the government is asserting that the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply to non-citizens, that's a pretty big stretch. What is their remedy to being subject to what seems like an arbitrary warrantless arrest or even the result of unlawful profiling? It's going to be a writ of habeas corpus to have not a judge from the immigration courts within the Department of Justice, but a federal judge at a U.S. district court to rule on the constitutionality of the decision by a law enforcement officer to bring them into detention in the first place.
From your experience, what is the impact on people and their families of the people who are detained in the way we're talking about?
The experience is really, really disastrous because, first of all, there's no right to counsel in the, or there's no right to court-appointed counsel in the immigration realm. And so many foreign nationals are navigating this, if they don't have the resources, without counsel. So that's disorienting and hard to assert their rights. And meanwhile, if they're financially precarious, and eventually if someone is in a prison or a detention center, they become financially precarious, well, what happens to their family? What happens to their stability of their housing if they lose their job? So asserting a constitutional right and getting out, you'll see in the news that celebrations of people achieving their release. But what happened during the period of time that they were unlawfully detained is their life fell apart, and now they have to rebuild from a deficit.
These cases where a judge is saying that ICE detained someone unlawfully. We're seeing it happen all over the country. Are these rulings unusual to you, or is this part of a trend in federal courts you're seeing?
It's a trend because the immigrants tend to be winning a lot. It's also a trend in that historically, challenges to detention that it had been prolonged or become unconstitutionally indefinite, they were pretty rare. So what we have now is, I wouldn't call it a proportionate response to the current enforcement, but arising from this really broad assertion of federal authority is the population of non-citizens asserting their constitutional rights. So we've got this tension of the administration is testing limits and testing norms, and the courts are checking it.
What about the people who say ICE is just doing its job, and sometimes you're going to have to get a few people into custody who shouldn't have been arrested, but that doesn't take away from the work that they're doing?
I don't really think that that's defensible. ICE is supposed to operate with warrants. Having a warrant for an arrest is just a basis of a free society. And so coloring outside the lines is not really an option. As hopefully has become clear, bringing a habeas petition is a chore. It's a burden for anyone, attorney or not, to file something, to have to affirmatively assert their rights. So it seems problematic that the question, the underlying issue, has turned power on its head. If the non-citizen is obligated to assert their rights on an affirmative basis in order to have them, then I think that we're in trouble.
Michael, do these rulings actually change what ICE can do?
Yes, over time they will. As relates to the individuals, a successful habeas petition will get that individual their freedom if the judge has ordered it, or it will get them a bond hearing if the judge has ordered it. It sets up some guardrails that give some confidence in the idea that they are entitled to due process of law. And I think just over time, with enough numerosity, it should make a systemic change. The executive branch has prerogative about its executive enforcement, and certainly now has the budget to do incredibly broad things. And so now it's the role of the courts to, again, put the guardrails on how that vast authority can be executed.
In recent days, a federal judge has now freed several Venezuelan immigrants in Central Florida, and it's warning ICE and local jail officials they could be held in contempt for violating court orders. For those of us who aren't lawyers, what does it actually mean when a federal judge says he's considering holding the government in contempt?
The court can issue fines. In some circumstances, they can issue punitive sanctions, being detention. The issue, though, is the courts require enforcement of their orders. So there's a natural tension between when the state and federal executives are doing things that are in contempt, well, who's going to carry out the will of the courts? And that's really like the razor's edge of lawlessness, I suppose.
What should we be paying attention to in terms of what happens next?
The issue really is you're looking at a vulnerable population without political clout, who are having enforcement targeted at them based on First Amendment violations, such as freedom of speech Fourth, Fifth, Sixth Amendment violations about access to counsel, due process protections. And then questions about whether, even the Eighth Amendment about being free from cruel and unusual punishment when our government subsidizes or directly pays for foreign detention under torturous conditions, as well as our international violations under various instruments. So if this erosion of fundamental rights and norms is happening to weak people, it can't be ignored, because who is next? Once the constitutional rights don't apply to somebody unpopular, what if you become unpopular?
That was Central Florida Public Media's Engage host, Sharon Stone, speaking with Stetson University College of Law professor Michael Vasteen. Hear more about this ongoing legal battle, including conversations with attorneys representing detainees, on Engage. Get it wherever you get this podcast. That's it for The Wrap this week. This podcast is produced by Central Florida Public Media, with editorial assistance from News Director LaToya Dennis. I'm Brendan Byrne. This is The Wrap.